If you've just tuned in, hi, I'm Pauline Batuna, Disability Day Worker for 3CR. You're listening to People-Led Disarmament, a special program for the Disability Day broadcast. For the next 30 minutes, we're going to be thinking about and hearing about some of the local organizing against weapons manufacturers and the military-industrial complex that is gaining momentum right now. The genocide of the Palestinian people, the unprecedented visibility of these war crimes, has thrust the urgency of demilitarization into the public consciousness. And I think it's extremely important for all people with disabilities to understand that demilitarization is a central disability justice project. Wars, war crimes, and weapons are leading causes of mass disabling violence globally. So, firstly, we're going to take a listen to an interview with Kira from the Albert Out of Victoria campaign, which is a demilitarization and anti-weapons manufacturer campaign that has arisen from the Free Palestine campaign. This interview was aired in November on an episode of 3CR's Women on the Line program, a national women's current affairs program. Kira explains militarism really well, its troubling manifestations in the state of Victoria, and why the Elbert Out of Victoria campaign is targeting the Elbert Systems company specifically.
So Albert Out of Victoria is a grassroots open campaign initiated by Free Palestine Coalition NAM. We started earlier this year, and our goal is to cut all government, university and business ties with Elbert Systems. So Elbert Systems is, as many people probably know, Israel's biggest weapons company. So that looks like producing 85% of the drones and, you know, military equipment that the IDF use and is using in this current genocide in Gaza. So our broader goal, other than cutting all those ties, which are very pervasive within not just the government, but also academic and university spaces, research spaces, and the private sector, is to end the militarization of Victoria and hold the government of Australia accountable for aiding and abetting genocide. So it's kind of research-based. We look a lot into uncovering this very opaque industry and these very opaque partnerships between Albert Systems and small but also massive corporations in Australia. And we run campaigns, and we're trying to build like a cross-community campaign against Albert's involvement in things like the Hanwha facility out by Avalon Airport, and also its partnerships with other Australian companies.
You mentioned the militarization of Victoria as a state. Could you give people a bit of a map of, firstly, what's going on in terms of the militarization of the Victorian state in particular, and maybe Elbert's role within all of that?
So if we're thinking about the militarization of Victoria and so-called Australia, it looks like, massive government investment and partnership. So massive amounts of money being transferred to these global weapons companies like Albert Systems, like Lockheed Martin, like Hanwha, which is a South Korean weapons company. An example of this is previously non-military organizations or companies like you might have heard of HTA, Electromold, all in the Victorian suburbs, who previously didn't work on military contracts, that are now making or treating parts of the F-35 fighter jets that fly over Gaza and are kind of one of the main weapons in Israel's arsenal, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we mean by militarization. We don't just mean existing military institutions like, you know, the Defence Force. We mean previously non-military institutions becoming militarized by a kind of explicit policy from the government to militarize areas of Australia's economy and communities and land that weren't previously militarized. So one of those is F-35s. We're looking at like Rosebank Engineering, HTA, Electromold. Another way that the government is militarizing the state is, I'm also thinking about the Victorian government, who has a memorandum of understanding with the Israeli Defense Ministry, which obviously, again, is very hidden, as with a lot of things in this defense and military space. But we know that it involves them sharing opportunities from global tensions, right? Another example is the Australian government allowing weapons companies like Hanwha to militarize classrooms. So again, this is a space that previously isn't militarized, becoming militarized. Weapons companies like Hanwha going into classrooms, running STEM programs, funded by weapons companies to normalize participation in the military-industrial complex, right? So associating an interest in technology, an interest in science with, you know, being a worker or, you know, a soldier for this industrial complex. So this is kind of generally what we mean by militarization. Also, I'm just going to give the example of Geelong. So Geelong was a hub for car manufacturing, right? And as that industry has moved out of that space, the response of the government has been to replace it with military like production or military factories. So again, we're militarizing these spaces as a replacement for previous industries. We're going into spaces that weren't previously militarized, as well as just building Australia's partnerships with these big military powers and stuff like that. So it's both militarization of spaces that were previously not militarized and the growing of military power, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Now, I think people would be quite concerned about the militarization of the education sector. You mentioned mm-hmm. that Hanwha goes into classrooms. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So they basically run these programs that for kind of, you know, gifted students in STEM. Teachers for Palestine have been doing a really good campaign about this, which is called Weapons Out of Classrooms. And they, you know, are the ones that kind of uncovered this. And also, like, just even on the surface, if we think about Ben Carroll, who is the Minister for Education, right, was previously, before his current role in Israel, signing defense contracts. So we can see this kind of crossover and these threads from all different parts of Australian government that lead back to militarization. But for example, the Hanwha program that Hanwha runs in schools, including out in Geelong, is kind of aimed to prime young gifted students into, you know, doing research projects into the military-industrial complex as a way of, you know, channeling them into those industries.
And so how is Albert connected into all this? Now, I know you mentioned the MOU between the Victorian government and the Israeli Department of Defence. How do you see Albert involved in all this? And what is some of your research within the campaign found?
We have amazing researchers at our campaign, as you well know, and a lot of what we've found has been just the astonishing amount of money that has been transferred to Albert Systems by the Australian government, some through subcontracts, so through just allowing other companies such as Hanwha to subcontract Albert and transfer that money, but also through like direct contracts that the government has with Albert Systems. And this is why when we talk about Australian complicity in genocide, especially in Israel's genocide, when we're actually talking about aiding and abetting, right? Because complicity is kind of just allowing something to happen. Aiding and abetting is providing the social kind of allowance and also the money to let this happen. So for example, since 2007, up until this year, the Department of Defense has signed $1.9 billion worth of contracts with Albert, right? These numbers are so big that they're kind of hard to comprehend, $1.9 billion. The largest of this was $349 million, right? So there's one contract that alone is $349 million. And I'm pretty sure this might be, hopefully it's not out of date, given it was only like a month or two ago that I found this out. But in September, so during the current iteration of the genocide, the Australian government signed a new $38,000 deal with Albert Systems. So we know that these deals are consistent over time. There's a multitude of them, and they're not stopping, despite the fact that we see Albert, you know, arming this current iteration of the genocide. So there's eight current contracts with Albert, which total 14.5 million, right?
Yeah.
These contracts look like things for aerospace systems, military science and research, arms and ammunition, accessories, drones, commercial, military, private vehicles. And I just want to zoom in on, you know, a very local example that our campaign has been working on. We were out in Geelong a couple of weeks ago to talk about this. And it's obviously the Avalon's, the Centre of Excellence is what it's called. And it's Hanwha's facility out next to the Avalon Airport. And basically, Hanwha has subcontracted Albert Systems to build basically Hun was building this factory to manufacture weapons of war right next to Avalon Airport, right? And they've subcontracted Albert Systems to up to, like, I think it's just under 1 billion, I might be wrong there, to make some certain kind of turret technology. So that's kind of a local example of Albert Systems' partnership with private companies on this continent. But there's also, you know, as I said, 8 current deals with Albert Systems between the government, with the Australian government.
So part of Albert Systems as well, it's not just these drones that they build, it's also these computer systems, these operating systems. So they have like a tech arm of their company.
Exactly.
It's called CSIR, C4ISR or something like that. But that also means that they're making links with Australian tech startups to develop that kind of field. And there's been, several companies that have worked with Albert. But these are harder to map out because they're smaller companies. And also Albert has been testing drones with Surf Life Saving Australia.
Oh, my gosh.
To make it, and down in Victoria as well, to make it seem like, you know, it's for bushfires. It's for saving lives. It's not, you know, we're not killing thousands of babies, you know.
Exactly.
It's like these are the same systems.
And I feel like that is a really popular language that the government and these companies use to obscure these deals, is that they say they always in Australia say it's for emergency relief and stuff like that. And it's really interesting, like identifying the ways that they cover it up. But yeah, you're right, like that's another example of militarization. Like, as I said, it's like every single part of society and the economy is becoming militarized. Tech is a huge example of that, right?
So I've got two questions here. Mm-hmm. I've got one, what other kind of like actions you've planned and that you're planning, but also how does the campaign connect to like broader movements against militarization and state violence?
Sure. So yeah, we had that action in Geelong a few weeks ago. We're planning a town hall. So one thing that obviously as a grassroots campaign, what we want is to like reach into communities that maybe aren't aware of the militarization of their communities and include them. And so we've got some amazing people out in Geelong and Wyndham and stuff like that. So we're organizing a town hall just to increase public knowledge about what's happening, because as I said, the government doesn't want us to know about these deals and the amount of money that's going into them, right? So that's one thing that we're organizing, getting people together, inviting people along from the community to learn more about this. So that we can run this really like coordinated cross-community campaign. And that kind of leads into other things that we do a lot about public education, like educating people, making sure that they know about the extent of the militarization of this continent and its links to global genocides like the one in Gaza, right? And how it links to other, you know, anti-militarist parts of the movement. Was that your question?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, research is a huge thing. If we're thinking about all the different, like if we just maybe like track the different spheres of the movement that have been active in the last year, obviously university encampments is a huge one, right? And all of these universities have had encampments. It's been because they have these similar deals, these investments with the companies that we're talking about, weapons companies, right? So that's another way that it links in. When we see the pickets that people do outside those companies that treat or manufacture parts of F-35s, that also comes from this kind of research and this coordinated campaign and across the movement campaign against militarization that is broad but also extremely specific. Because if you think about these companies make one tiny part of the F-35s, but we go out there and we picket them. So it's kind of this, both this really zoomed out perspective of the global military industrial complex, but also where is it happening locally to us as well. I would also say that we know that the biggest and, you know, one of the most effective tools we have for opposing this genocide and opposing the Zionist regime is BDS, right? Boycott, divest and sanction. And that this campaign, Albert Out of Victoria, is an embodiment of those demands. We know and we research where Albert is connected in our societies, in our universities, with private companies, and we boycott them and we demand that they divest, and we demand that the Australian government sanctions Israel. And so we're kind of embodying this BDS movement by enacting these kind of campaigns. For example, even things like, I know that you guys might have been looking into this, is links with super funds, right? So do our super funds have links or investments with these weapons companies, including Alpha Systems? If so, how do we get them to divest? So it's kind of, linked into this larger call of BDS as well. And like just generally against US imperialism, right? How do we understand, like we talked a little bit before about AUKUS, like how do we understand these partnerships as being part of US imperialism and the way that the Australian government acts as being an upholder of that imperialism. Australia is not just complicit, like they're not just ignoring what's happening and doing nothing. They're enabling it. They are enabling, they are, as you say, the outpost for US imperialism in the Pacific. I grew up in Aotearoa, New Zealand, so I would say that New Zealand is actually like complicit in the way that they're just not manufacturing weapons. They don't have as much of this like economic industrial ties with the military industrial complex, but Australia is very different in the sense that it is literally arming, funding, enabling this genocide, right, and then this general global armed imperialism and state violence. So, and yeah, as you say, the AUKUS agreement just kind of cements that. It just makes it obvious, puts it in writing, you know. And what we'll probably see, like we know that the AUKUS agreement kind of allows all this transfer of sensitive military information. So we know that we're just kind of becoming more and more intertwined with like the US state and its military activities.
That was Kira, a researcher for the Albert Out of Victoria campaign. It's worth mentioning here that after that interview aired, the Victoria Labor government announced it would not renew its Defence Memorandum of Understanding with Israel. And aside from pressure from the Free Palestine movement, from Albert Out of Victoria and other protesters, in Parliament, the government have been questioned by the Greens repeatedly. On Sunday, I got the chance to speak with Rachel from the Albert Out of Victoria campaign about how this MOU renouncement is being received by the campaign and how and why people, including and perhaps especially disabled people, should get involved through offering our skills and time for the cause. So recently the Victorian government announced its memorandum of understanding with the Australian Defence Force won't be renewed. You know, in light of this information and this recent occurrence, what's the campaign's current goals and the long-term goals? And if you could also speak about how the campaign views this recent announcement.
Sure. So we literally had a meeting yesterday, so we have kind of talked a bit about it. And look, it's always good to celebrate a success, no matter how big or small it is, because, you know, for a lot of people who feel like the last year has just been so overwhelming with all the information and a lot of us have been out on the streets and, you know, trying to talk to people in our workplaces or wherever, it is good to celebrate when the government finally listens to people. We obviously don't know much about the report because the government is also being very secretive about the information, but it's not going to stop us from continuing to highlight the fact that the Australian and Victorian government has ties to Israel. And, you know, unfortunately, our military defence budget keeps growing and the Hanwar Defence Facility exists now out in Geelong. And, you know, they like to celebrate that they're providing jobs for people out there. So we're kind of like, watch this space, but, you know, we're all deeply committed to the Palestine movement. And so it's part of what we do is just to look at how the military complex is in Australia. And despite the claims by the government that, oh, we're not, you know, supplying arms to Israel, it is clear that we have factories in Victoria that are making parts for weapons.
Mm. And speaking of sort of celebrating some successes, could you give an example or two of Albert campaign activities maybe overseas that have been successful?
Yes. So they have been mainly focused in Europe, it seems. So in the UK, pretty recently, the Palestine Action Network, they have been targeting Albert factories. And so that's a direct action group, by the way, trying to highlight the fact that there are these factories in the UK. And so Albert Systems UK has actually revoked its contract with its subsidiary there. That has happened very recently. And also Barclays, the big financial company, has divested from Albert Systems. So that's just two examples in the UK, but also there's other companies like Deutsche Bank back in 2010 divested from Elbit Systems, Danske Bank. Oh, sorry, it's a Swedish one. They've divested, and also HSBC and AXA Investment. And back in 2009, the Norwegian Pension Fund also divested from Elbit. So there's been quite an ongoing campaign to highlight Israel's involvement with weapons and Elbit.
Terrific. I mean, those are significant wins. So why should people join the Elbit Out of Victoria campaign?
I would say that whatever your capacity is, we just need more people to help spread the word. So I've gone through periods of feeling outraged, just feeling like there's nothing you can do, just feeling like our government doesn't listen to us. But, you know, anytime I do dip into the news and just see the horrible things that are happening in Palestine, it makes me at least want to come together with other people and see what kind of things we can do, no matter how big or small. And so we just need more people to raise awareness. Like when we had a rally out in Geelong a month ago, just so many local people were outraged to know that there's a weapons facility being built in their neighbourhood. And so, you know, the fact that the Victorian government is using taxpayers' money with these partnerships, or that, you know, universities are using the guise of so-called research to have companies like Boeing manufacture or developing things there. So yeah, we just need more people involved, and, you know, we just like to share the workload. So anything that people think they can possibly contribute, we are just welcome to building the group. And so, yeah, we meet every 2 weeks.
Where can people get in contact with the campaign and join?
That's a very good question. So currently, you can get in touch through Instagram on Free Palestine Coalition. So that's where we post about the meetings, but also we meet in person and online. So the physical address is 78-80 Curzon Street, Curzon Street, North Melbourne. Unfortunately, it is not wheelchair accessible. The room that we meet on is about four steps up from the front door, and also the toilet is another three or four steps up. So just letting you know, we often have more than half the group meeting on Zoom. Like yesterday, nine of us were on Zoom and three people were actually at the physical space. So Zoom is always an option. And yeah, December 14th is our last meeting of the year. So we'll be mostly kind of talking about what's the plan for 2025. We have a forum that we're building in February. And so yes, if you want to Google us as well, if you literally Google Elbit Out of Victoria, it will come up on the Unionists for Palestine website. And if you scroll right down to the bottom, there's a little how can I get involved, and you just put your email address and your name and everything. Well, somebody will get back to you.
Rachel, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Pauline.
Before we close the program today, I have one more interview to share with you. This one is with Jess Walton, who I've also seen at an Elbit meeting. I joined Jess in the foyer of the State Library of Victoria on Sunday morning, where Jess has been doing a weekly read-in for Palestine. They had some really important words to share on how important it is to stand with all Palestinians and all people across the world currently being harmed by the military-industrial complex, especially those who are becoming disabled as a result or who were already disabled.
Hi, my name is Jessica Walton. I'm a writer and a teacher. So every week at 11 a.m. in the foyer of the State Library Victoria, I run the weekly Huda El Susi Memorial read-in, where we read books about Palestine and also about Sudan and Congo and Lebanon and any other places in the world where people are fighting against colonialism and imperialism and racism, to educate ourselves. And the reason that we started this read-in was because some of us felt that we wanted to be able to have conversations with other people about these things, but sometimes lacked the a deeper knowledge of what was going on, and we felt that it was important to educate ourselves before we could then go on and talk about it to other people. I can talk about Huda, if you like, about yes. The person it's named for. Yes. So Huda El Susi was a Palestinian journalist in Gaza. She was an emerging writer. She had just started writing articles for Electronic Intifada, and she also wrote for an account called We Are Not Numbers on Twitter for that organisation. And really just starting out as a writer, she was being mentored by Dr. Rafat Elaria, And both Huda and Dr. Rafat were murdered by Israel. And so, you know, a lot of people know about Rafat and about his beautiful poem and about his work in Gaza. But I thought it was important also to remember a writer who was really just starting out as a writer, and I guess making the point that every life lost is a tragedy and should be remembered. There are so many lives lost, obviously. And so my small action is to run this group and to remember Huda and talk about her work. So there is a week happening at the moment called Read Palestine Week. There is a hashtag Read Palestine on social media as well, where people generally talk about books that they're reading about Palestine. But to coincide with the International Day of Solidarity with Palestine, this is a particular week where people are being encouraged to read more books about Palestine, particularly those by Palestinian authors themselves. When the genocide began, there were authors who were taking part in workshops teaching teenagers to write. It's something that happens every year here at the State Library Victoria. And some of those authors, because there was a genocide going on, spoke out about that genocide as writers, spoke about writers in the genocide and spoke about the genocide more broadly. And in response to that, the library cancelled the event. They said they had postponed it, but they cancelled the event, basically, and those writers lost their work. And it was a form of censorship of those writers. And the library claimed that it wasn't, but internally staff have spoken out about the fact that it was a response to statements that those authors had made on social media. So I was feeling very angry with the State Library. I am an author who did that same event last year, and I'm also anti-genocide, and I just cannot believe that this institution, I mean, it is a colonial institution, but, you know, they pay lip service, I guess, to social justice in a lot of different ways, and now we're in a genocide and they have failed to speak out and stand up against genocide. So I've been very angry and disappointed. I did some research and found that the library has a wing that has been funded by a family that supports Israel and their genocide. And I tried to have an action here at the library about that, where I pointed out that that family was supporting and funding Israel and supporting the genocide. And they had made racist statements about Palestinians and about Arab people here in Australia. The library did not allow me to go into the library to do that action. And they called the police. And so that was, I guess, where things came to a head between me and SLV. And I decided that there needed to be a weekly action here, not only to highlight the SLV's complicity in genocide, but also to remind the library once a week that there are writers who and readers who stand against what they are doing and their lack of action and lack of courage. So when I had my action here, the sign that I hold up in the State Library was about how Palestine has the largest cohort of child amputees in history. That was a quote from a doctor, a surgeon in Palestine. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing here is a mass disablement of Palestinians. So that so many people have died and also become disabled in this genocide. It's a mass disabling event, and that is obviously highly relevant to the disability community. But also there are disabled people living in Palestine who were disabled before this happened, who have been who are disabled because they're part of the because disabled people are everywhere, and so they have lost accessibility, they've lost access to services, they've lost mobility aids, they've lost interpreters, they've lost so many things in this genocide, as well as many of them losing their lives and being further disabled by the genocide. And that is not being highlighted enough. It's not being talked about in the media enough. It's not being talked about by politicians enough. And our disability orgs are not talking about it enough either. And so I feel it's very important for disabled people to make those connections between our community here and between the community of disabled people in Palestine and in Gaza in particular. Many of them have also become disabled because of the actions of Israel before October 7th. So occupation disables people, trauma disables people. long imprisonment and torture disables people, and these are all things that Palestinians have been facing for a very, very long time.
3CR Radical Radio.